This is 91.3 KUAF, your home for NPR News for more than 32 years. And this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, the first day of December 2017. Ahead, it's December, so Christmas and holiday events are underway. Tomorrow, the Wampus Wonderland event will put local makers, illustrators, and creators front and center. We'll talk with two of the organizers. First, a man with all of his Christmas shopping out of the way, Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. He joins us for an examination of some of the week's news. Welcome back to the show, Michael.
Well, thanks for having me, but I don't even shop for Christmas, so yeah, I got it out of the way if you don't shop.
There you go. Well, not to wish our lives away, but let's look at 2018, because as we know, it's a political year, but it might be getting more interesting than we realize. Let's first start with the Fort Smith mayor's race. I thought all the shoes had fallen, but they had not, had they?
No, they have not. Don Hutchings, who has been on the board, on and off the board for the past decade, has thrown his hat in the ring. He's a preacher. He's the senior pastor. I don't know what their official title is at Evangel Temple, but he has put his hat in the ring. If you remember, George McGill, who's a state representative, popular in the Fort Smith area, African American, he threw his hat in the ring some time back, and kind of back to a point where these are sensitive topics, but we still have somewhat of a underlying racial issue. You know, we've had some people push back against having an African-American police chief. Then you had a popular African-American say he's going to get the mayor's race. And, you know, if Don Hutchings hadn't entered, it would have been George McGill's race to lose. Now it's going to be a contested race, and I'm not going to be surprised if it falls along some racial lines. Let's hope it stays professional, courteous, above board. But there's too much underlying chatter on this for me to believe that there wasn't some interest in having a qualified, popular white candidate also enter the race. The only other person that was in the race is a 21-year-old student from the University of Arkansas at Fort Smith, and probably very passionate. I think he's a very nice young man, but I don't think that the citizens would have voted for him.
This is Fort Smith has a city manager form of government, so the mayor in Fort Smith is not, say, as powerful as
right.
others. But you have a state legislator and now a city council member vying for this job.
Right. And you're right. It's largely ceremonial. Only pays $10,000 a year, plus you get a $400 a month car allowance. There's a somewhat of a bully pulpit aspect to it. I think Mayor Ray Baker, a lot of folks remember Mayor Baker. He was probably one of the best that I've seen in using that bully pulpit to cheerlead. I'm not saying he was effective at all times, but he definitely was very vocal, very prominent, and often led the charge on some issues, sales tax issues, for example. And it was curious that Mr. Hutchings got in the race because he had recently been talking about wanting to do more, stay on top of the city budget, stay on top of the police and fire pension issue, do more to raise wages for the city workers. Well, he can't do that as mayor. The best way to do that is as city director. But maybe he'll use that if he wins, maybe he'll use it to keep pushing for those causes.
All right. Now, we don't know for sure, obviously, if Tom Cotton is going to end up at the head of the CIA, as the New York Times suggests there is a plan that if Rex Tillerson is fired and Mike Pompeo becomes the new Secretary of State, then Tom Cotton is picked. But at the risk of putting our political cart before our horses, we would have an open seat in the Senate that, depending on when and if, big if, Tom Cotton does leave that seat, it's either an appointment or a special election.
Right, and I don't think we're necessarily risking putting the cart before the horse. I mean, it's most major news outlets are reporting this, and it depends really how on when Cotton would officially vacate the office. If he vacates the seat before July 6th of next year, then the governor will appoint an interim senator, and then that will be filled in the 2018 general election. Now, the person who's appointed can't run. They can't succeed themselves, so to speak. But if Cotton leaves the office after July 6th, then Governor Hutchinson can appoint an interim senator to serve until the job is filled in the 2020 general election, because 2020 is when this term ends. Cotton is now serving. Most speculation is that it will happen before the end of the year, before Christmas. Of course, Senator Cotton would then have to be approved by the Senate, which would probably happen sometime in the first quarter of next year. So it's likely this scenario plays out. Senator Cotton would vacate the office before July 6th. And so Governor Hutchinson, so there would be a special election in 2018 for that seat. So it'll be You know, there are some folks who suggested, for example, Bud Cummins, who has congressional experience. He's the Eastern U.S. Attorney, the U.S. Prosecuting Attorney from the Eastern District of Arkansas. The governor might appoint him. Some have said, no, Bud wants to run for it. So that may be the challenge the governor has, finding somebody to appoint who doesn't also want to run for it.
We can speculate all we want, but this will, it's not unprecedented, of course. I mean, Alabama's going through it right now with Jeff Sessions leading. Right. But for the Arkansas landscape, this is different.
Yeah, I mean, look, it creates some political dominoes. You know, would a Congressman Womack or French Hill, you know, Womack, he likes the political scene. And, you know, the Senate is probably one of the ultimate good suit clubs in the country. They're just 100 members. It's a very, very selective body. So there will be a lot of folks in Arkansas, both already in Congress, who may have run before, that'll be interested in that spot. You know, would a Mike Beebe, for example, out of retirement to run on the Democratic side? Who knows? I mean, if he did that, that would be a hell of a race. Folks like me love it.
Can we as a state handle the amount of speculation that is being bandied about now between athletic director, head football coach, and now who might or might not be an Arkansas U.S. senator?
I say we just create, that's just all one job. We just put all that job and vote on that person. What do you say?
That is not a bad idea, Michael Tilley.
Yeah.
All right. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about these stories and many others around the clock at talkbusiness.net. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome, sir.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Additional support comes from Ozark Natural Foods, Northwest Arkansas's consumer-owned food co-op since 1971, offering a full-service deli, organic chicken and livestock feed, bulk foods, and more. Ozark Natural Foods, located in the Evelyn Hill Shopping Center, or on the web at onf.coop. Webster University Fayetteville will host Webster After Hours, a networking event open to the public with food and refreshments provided Thursday, December 7th from 4 to 6 p.m. Webster University is located at 688 Millsap Road, Suite 200. Attendees may RSVP at webster.edu/Fayetteville or 571-1511.
This is Ozarks at Large. We conclude a conversation today with Michael Vandenberg, the co-chair of the Vanderbilt University Energy, Environment, and Land Use Program, and a member of the law faculty at Vanderbilt. He was in Fayetteville in October to deliver the keynote address for the 2017 Arkansas Law Review Symposium, devoted this fall to environmental sustainability and private governance. Vandenberg and Jonathan Gilligan have written the new book, Beyond Politics, The Private Governance Response to Climate Change. During Vandenberg's visit to the University of Arkansas this fall, he also came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. On yesterday's program, he discussed how private interests have taken the lead, rather than government regulation, when it comes to sustainable practice and policy. In the second part of our conversation, we discuss public attitudes toward sustainability, reaching all the way back to the 1970s, when then-President Jimmy Carter addressed the nation about the topic.
Jimmy Carter's gotten a bad rap on that. Mm-hmm. It's too easy to belittle the idea that you should wear a cardigan sweater and sit at home and be cold.
He was asking to make a small sacrifice.
He was asking for a small sacrifice, and the answer, though, is we never really explored the nuances of the message he was trying to give, and he probably didn't give it in a way that was as effective as it could be. So we first have to divide the kinds of things that are more like energy efficiency, where you get the same service, but you get it with less energy. So if I buy a more fuel-efficient heating unit, I can get the same amount of heat, but at less cost. So that's efficiency. What Carter was talking about is more conservation. So what he was talking about is reducing the use of something. And that's valuable, too. They're both valuable. But what tends to happen is people tend to focus on the one-off conservation items, make fun of them, and then move away. Mm. Part of the reason for that is there are very few institutions in America that will profit if you don't use energy. So we ultimately have to think about, will your utility in your neighborhood be better off if you don't use their product? Probably not. If that's true, are they likely to put together the most sophisticated programs to induce you to do that? So many utilities are trying in good faith to do small programs, but ultimately this is going to require, I think, work by companies and, again, religious organizations, civic and cultural organizations, philanthropists, because ultimately it's going to take institutions that have a have an incentive to try to reduce electricity use or natural gas use.
This is nuanced. I mean, this takes more than a 45-second talking head talking to another talking head.
That's
on
right.
a cable. Are you optimistic that we can have – I mean, these conversations are happening, but that the greater us can have these conversations?
I think it's starting to happen, and I think I'm not just naive about that. So I gave a talk at the University of Virginia a couple of weeks ago, and just a few days beforehand, Facebook had announced that it was putting a new billion-dollar data center into Virginia, and Dominion Power, the electric company, was going to sell it 100% renewable power. And so you know, in the South, I see this in Tennessee, when new businesses arrive, they say, we'll arrive in your state, but you better provide renewable power. So I think what we're seeing is enough of an incentive through efficiency, through the declining cost of renewable power, and through people's sense that although they don't like big government, they're also not blind to the fact that we've got problems out there, that we can have a cleaner environment. So I think there's a growing sense of that, and I think as government gets less and less in the business of playing the role of being the environmental protector, I think what you're seeing is individuals and companies and others stepping up. There was a movement when the Trump administration stepped away from the Paris Agreement called We Are Still In. Hundreds of companies, dozens of universities, many cities said, no, we're still in.
Fayetteville mayor.
Being
yeah.
one of them. So, so I think what you're seeing is not that the private sector can solve the problem, but it's stepping in a very big way. And I think one other piece that I find fascinating, I think we'll turn the corner when we begin to realize that this issue is neither liberal nor conservative. I did a study years ago that looked at the question of personal responsibility. And what we found is that conservatives talked about personal responsibility all the time. Except not when it came to the environment. Liberals talked about the environment all the time, but never talked about personal responsibility. And to me, that's the gap that's out there. And I think the gap that needs to be closed is to say we need to take personal responsibility for our environmental behavior. And when we do that as a corporate manager or a civic organization leader or a household member, then when you aggregate those activities together, you can actually get, we believe, a billion tons of carbon emissions and a lot of other environmental problems saved too.
I can hear someone listening to our conversation, mm-hmm. but yelling at the radio saying, hey, wait a second. We do need government involvement. Triangle Factory Fire, Exxon Valdez,
that's right.
Bhopal, and Union
that's right.
Carbide. I mean,
that's right.
Someone's got to watch, they would argue.
So nothing in the work that I do with Jonathan Gilligan, my co-author on this project, nothing that we do suggests that we don't ultimately need a role for government. We're even very carefully selecting the kind of initiatives we discuss to make sure they're not the kind of initiatives that might displace government. What we're looking for instead is to buy time. And so the thought is not that we don't need a strong government role. The kinds of things we're talking about can fill gaps, but they're unlikely to completely solve problems.
How much time do we have?
On climate, the cost goes up tremendously every decade we wait, and there may be some thresholds that if we pass them, we can't go back. So our view is that we need to start right now, and that if we wait a decade before we fully engage on this issue, it will be too late. And by too late, I mean that the cost will get to be astronomical. And again, we will get to a point where this is largely irreversible at some point. We just don't know where that point is, and that's part of the problem. My physicist co-author describes this problem as being like driving down the highway in a car with a tachometer measuring your revolutions per minute. And you can ride in the red zone in the tachometer where the car is going very fast for a period of time, and that doesn't mean that your motor is going to freeze up automatically, but the risk of it doing so goes up logarithmically. And so we face the same problem with the climate issue. We don't know how long we can stay well above a 2 degrees Celsius kind of temperature. No one scientist can tell us that. But if you are conservative about taking risk, then you don't want to stay in that red zone any longer than you have to.
And that tachometer for someone in Funafuti or Marshall Islands is more red than it is for those of us in the middle of the United States.
That's right. I mean, there's at least one argument that we're 10 feet committed on sea level already, when you can just do the math on that. I guess the other problem on climate that I think people don't give enough attention to is we almost, when we look at climate reports and we listen to debates about climate, we almost are doing those reports and those debates as if time ends in 2100. So we talk about Where will sea level be in 2100? Maybe it'll be 2 feet, maybe 1 feet, maybe 3 feet. We don't really know for sure. To me, what is inexcusable is that we're not talking about the fact that the 500 generations after 2100 will still be dealing with what we've done today. And so what we do in the next two decades might ultimately have an effect that will last for 500 generations. Unless we can come up with some way to take the carbon back out of the air, a substantial percentage of everything we release today will still be warming the atmosphere 10,000 years from now. So there are almost no other problems we deal with that have that kind of long tail. To deal with that a little bit, people always criticize some of the kinds of things that we work on by saying, yes, but people don't care about the deep future. So we actually did a study of that. We asked people, if you had $100, how much of that $100 would you devote to having a better reputation today during your lifetime versus after you die? Because this is a problem where the climate problems won't become particularly egregious in the next 20 or 30 years. Once they get serious, it's going to be hard to get rid of them. They could last for 5 or 10,000 years. So the issue is really not what people think of us today. It's what they will think of us in future generations. What will your grandchildren think of you, your great-grandchildren, and their great-grandchildren? And what we found was striking, which is that almost $40 by the average individual would be devoted to buying a better reputation after they die. And particularly strongly, people believe that your reputation among your offspring after you die or your relatives, people you're related to, really matters. So we know that people do care. And one of the things we suggested is a legacy registry. So the idea is right now, whatever you or I do won't be known. What the presidents do will probably be known, and maybe the Senate Majority Leader or the House Speaker. But for most of us, we're essentially anonymous over multiple generations. But that's a solvable problem. What we could do is create a database that allows all of us to simply record what we believed and what we did today and have that information stored in a way that would make it available to our great-great-grandchildren. And we could ask people, well, what do you want them to think about you? What do you want them to know? And put your money where your mouth is.
I love that idea.
Challenge for all of us is that when we ask computer experts, what kind of electronic database should we use? They said the best way to preserve data is to print it out. It's never easy.
Where can people find out more about your work?
We have a book coming out called Beyond Politics, and we have a Beyond Politics book website, so it can be found there. The book is available for pre-order on Amazon and will be available in independent bookstores as well. So for now, if you just search for Beyond Politics or either of our last names, Vandenberg and Gilligan, you'll come up with our website and the book. And the book is a long slog. I won't kid you. It has some light passages, but it's not an easy read in places. But we hope people will be able to pick chapter by chapter and find the areas that really matter to them.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. It's a joy.
Michael Vandenberg is the co-chair of the Vanderbilt University Energy, Environment, and Land Use Program and is a member of the law faculty at Vanderbilt University in Nashville. He was in Fayetteville in October to deliver the keynote address for the 2017 Arkansas Law Review Symposium, devoted this year to environmental sustainability and private governance. Michael Vandenberg and Jonathan Gilligan have written the new book, Beyond Politics, The Private Governance Response to Climate Change.
On this week's On the Media, the Washington Post was the victim of a would-be sting operation until it turned the tables.
The newspaper confronted a woman who falsely claimed that Alabama Senate nominee Roy Moore impregnated her as a teenager.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
On the Media, Sunday morning at 11 on 91.3. Tomorrow, the second annual Wampus Wonderland will greet shoppers beginning at 10 a.m. at the Fayetteville Town Center. Around 100 artists, crafters, makers, and even cocktail creators will be in residence until 6 tomorrow evening, most of them local. This week, two of the organizers of Wampus Wonderland, Olivia Trimble and Chad Maupin, came to the Carver Center for Public Radio. Chad says this second edition's planning is a bit less hectic than last year's show.
No, it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it was a super fast thing that happened.
So I created the Cattywampus Co-op just as, well, maybe we'll do some shows with friends, like just a casual thing. And then there was this need that opened up in the community, and Olivia encouraged me, like, hey, what if we do this? And okay. And then before you know it, 3 months later, there's a show. So it was out of nowhere. We were literally just like, hey, this is a thing. And then
we decided to do it and then like 4 days later opened applications right. because they had to be open then.
So that so the attitude was just sort of like, well, if we can just pull off a show at all, anywhere, people can make some money and we'll have a good time. And then we were able to like actually have a good show, and all the vendors said it was, I mean, almost to a vendor said it was either their favorite show or best show they'd done. So the community, and that's thanks to the community. That's not about us. That's Fayetteville and the creative community coming out and supporting this. So that made it very obvious that, well, there's a strong interest in this. Maybe we should keep it up and see what happens. And so it was started very modestly, and it was out of nowhere.
Okay, so now year two, it's not out of nowhere anymore. So what will be the same? What will be different in 2017?
This year, we're in the Fayetteville Town Center, and we have zones. So we have these, instead of everything just being in the main room, when you come in the front doors, you're going to see our first CaddyCon. And I'm a big comic book nerd, so this, and a lot of our makers fit in with this already, but this is all sort of nerd-related art, hip art. You don't have to be a comic book nerd to go in here. A lot of your favorite creators will be in this space, but they sort of fit in with the tone of what I would like to see become a part of the show, which is sort of a my version of a nerd con. And we will.
And when
have
you say con, you mean short for convention.
Yes. Yeah. And modern day comic book conventions are more about energy drinks than they are about the art form. So I would really like to work on that and develop that. And we're going to have a really cool comic book vendor. He has a lot of old Golden Age and Silver Age comics and really cool stuff. We have John Lucas, who's worked for Marvel Comics and DC Comics and really great talent. Nikki Dawes is a illustrator. She works for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and does a lot of kind of nerd-friendly illustration. And so we've got that area. We've got the main vendor area, and then we have Olivia's.
Then we have a the Wonderland Market, so that's where we'll have Pink House Alchemy slinging super fancy pants cocktails. And there will also be, you know, non-boozy drinks. We'll have Ozark Herbal Creations with their amazing tonics. We're going to have a couple of pie vendors, some cake decorating wizards. And then we'll have South in Your Mouth and Wicked Wood Fired Pizza and then the awesome Roast Nuts people. So we'll have kind of all of the delicious things in one spot. So we're hoping that having different zones will sort of help with flow of traffic and sort of help maybe like a shopper who maybe doesn't know exactly what they want, sort of hone in on it.
You know, in 2017, shopping, if you're shopping for holiday gifts, might mean online, might mean in a bigger box store. And so you're buying something that's one of several,
right?
Thousand, perhaps. With Cattywampus, you're buying one of one, or maybe one of five or ten.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's value in that for the shopper?
Absolutely. I mean, and just coming to the show, you know, maybe it's a weekend where they don't get paid till the next week. But if you come to the show, you can meet the makers, you can grab some information, and I feel like, beyond just connecting the potential shopper with the maker that day, it will hopefully and often does forge a relationship with the shopper and the maker that lasts, you know, for a long time.
Yeah, everyone has a card.
Everyone has a card or an Instagram handle or a...
Well, I mean, I've lived here 10 years now, and it's always been a great creative community, and that's what drew me to moving here. But it's really exploded, and it's really changed, and I love that. And I think this show hopefully is a little love letter to that, that we want to try and create outlets for people who are artists, who are cool, who can actually look at this community and say, well, I love it, and I can actually make a career here. I can actually make my art work for me. And that's always a struggle with a creative person, is temptation to move to a bigger area. I should move to Portland or whatever. But it's so expensive to live there, and there's so many draws to this region. And if we keep working like this and develop this community, that's a viable option for a lot of people, and it makes the whole region a lot more exciting and interesting for all of us.
Chad Maupin and Olivia Trimble are members of the Cattywampus Co-op of Artists, responsible for staging tomorrow's Wampus Wonderland Show at the Fayetteville Town Center from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. You can learn more at the Wampus Wonderland Facebook page. To help us ring in December 2017, Katie Hendrickson, host of Note with Katie Hendrickson, every Sunday through Thursday night from 8 until 10 p.m. on 91.3. Happy December.
Thank you. Happy December to you.
Are you ready for it? Are you all prepared?
No, not really. I don't think I'm ever prepared. Everything just keeps going faster and faster and faster.
Agreed. But you do have some interesting things to talk about for the next week of Note.
Absolutely. I'm really excited. I've partnered up with this amazing choral group out of the United Kingdom. They're called ORA. They're a young a cappella group that sings from the Renaissance polyphonic classics to contemporary pieces. They run the gamut, but they have a project and they've partnered with classical stations all over, I think mostly in Europe and in the United States. But they're doing a new song that they've recorded for every day of the Advent calendar. And so they've asked if I wanted to participate. So, and of course, it's a little bit different for my show. My show doesn't air every single day. So there's going to be a time where you're going to hear three songs at once. But Sunday through Thursday, every day during Advent, there'll be a new song premiered, a choral piece from ORA singers. So it'll be really exciting.
So that'll be through, and so that goes through Christmas.
Yes.
All right. What else this week?
Well, I have to ask you this because of the piece that I've picked out for the Sunday Symphony. Do you like to listen to sad music?
I do. I love to.
So what do you like about listening to sad music? Does it make you reflective?
Yeah.
Do you find some solace in knowing that you're part of this human condition and we're all sad sometimes?
If I'm listening to sad music when I'm sad, absolutely. I think if I'm not necessarily sad and I'm listening to sad music, it just kind of calms me down.
So this is why I'm asking, because the subtitle for the symphony that I've picked out is Symphony of Sorrowful Songs. And it's a piece from the Polish composer Henryk Grodzki. And it's an interesting piece because what happened was he premiered it in the late 70s, and it's not considered an avant-garde piece. It's considered like more in the avenue of Arvo Pärt, who was not considered avant-garde at all. So he wasn't. So he kind of had a falling out with because before that he was kind of considered this like big avant-garde composer. And then these critics and people in the avant-garde circles heard that symphony and they're like, wait, this is not like it because it's very melodic. And then in the 90s, though, there was a recording with Don Upshaw and Nonesuch put that out. And in the 90s, that recording of the symphony did so well, it was like at the top of the classical charts. And so that's when the first time when that symphony really became popularized. A little bit more about the actual piece. I'm going to just read from the liner notes
here.
Poland is forever marked by the horrors of World War II and especially those of the Holocaust. The Auschwitz death camp is only a few miles from Grodzki's adopted home of Katowice. Although he says the Third Symphony is not about the Holocaust, he cannot deny its influence. So he speaks in a documentary about writing this piece. He says, I wanted to express a great sorrow, the war, the rotten times under communism, our life today, the starving, what madness. This sorrow, it burns inside me. I cannot shake it off.
So that'll be Sunday night. But you can also listen Sunday morning from 9 to 11 on KUAF 2. And I bring that up because you're going to try to have some people do something else Sunday night, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. Maybe you are looking for something to do. Get out of the house, and I have tickets, actually. Voces 8, another vocal ensemble from the UK, and another a cappella, amazing a cappella ensemble from the UK. They're playing as part of the 10x10 art series at Walton Arts Center Sunday night. So I have a few tickets available, and I would love to get those to people who want to go to the show. So all you have to do is find Of Note with Katie Henriksen on Facebook. Send me a message. Say you'd like to be considered. I'm also on Twitter. That's Of Note KUAF. If you want to tweet to me, I'll add your name to consideration, and maybe you'll be able to go see Voices 8. I'm going to the show. I can't wait to see them. It'll be great.
You know, several years ago, Anonymous 4 was at Walton Arts Center on a Sunday night. And it's just something to walk out after, you know, Anonymous 4, also a vocal, though they had musical accompaniment. It's just a really neat thing to walk out into the dark on a Sunday night after hearing a concert like that.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait. I always sang growing up. I was in lots of choirs. So there's something so beautiful and remarkable about seeing a choral ensemble.
All right. Of Note, Sunday through Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m., but also Sunday through Thursday, 9 to 11 a.m. on KUAF2. Happy December, Katie.
Happy December to you. Thank you.
It's that time of year again. Our annual Christmas show is Tuesday, December 5th at the Fayetteville Public Library. We'll have musical performances by Bernice Hembree and the Scorchers. Other guests include Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette and the Fayetteville-based storytelling group That's What She Said. We'll also hear a reading of How the Grinch Stole Christmas by the host of Later with Jason Sewell. Admission is free, and we'll be collecting non-perishable food and personal hygiene items for the Bentonville-based nonprofit Pearl. The show starts at 6:30. Hope to see you there.
At this festive time of year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?
They are. I wish I could say they were not.
Oh, from what you said at first, I was afraid that something had happened to stop them in their useful course.
No, don't worry. Becca Martin Brown, features editor of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, as Ebenezer Scrooge, and I, as collectors of the Dickensian world, are not giving up our day jobs.
It's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
But we are facing the fact that not everyone loves all the holiday stuff. So today, we have two itineraries, one for Scrooge and one for the ghost of Christmas yet to come.
Okay. What are we going to do first?
We're going to do Scrooge because, well, we did a great intro. Tonight, go to the movies. There's a lot of good movies out, but go see a movie called Painted Woman. This movie is based on a Dusty Richards novel.
Dusty! I love Dusty!
And it was directed by James Cotton, who is from Fort Smith, and it was a spotlight selection for the Bentonville Film Festival, and it was shot in Oklahoma, and it's got, at least this weekend, a run on the big screen at AMC in Fayetteville and in Fort Smith.
Dusty lives in Springdale, and he's an author of many books. He's been on the show. He's a treasure.
Winner of every Western Writer Award. This is based on The Mustanger and the Lady. The heroine is a female.
Hmm.
She's the painted lady with the heart of gold.
Okay.
Who gets out of an abusive relationship and changes her own world. Saturday evening, you can go to the debut concert of the Northwest Arkansas Men's Chorus. This is a project to bring gay men together to sing, but you don't have to be gay to sing in it. Neither do you have to be male. You have to be able to sing tenor or bass.
Well, that still leaves me out.
Me too. But this is their debut concert at 6 o'clock at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, and it is free. They want to tell you all about who they are. Or you can go see Betsy and Clark. They are performing at 7 o'clock at the Ozark Mountain Smokehouse in Fayetteville on Saturday evening. It's $15. This is a pick and post concert. She and her partner do, man, it's Ozark's music. And then on Sunday afternoon, you could go out to Terra Studios and see the Baskins perform.
Right.
From 1 to 4. It's free. Now, if you want to do the ho-ho happenings.
Sure.
It's going to cost you more money.
Well, okay. We call this surge pricing, do we not?
Yes.
Yes. It's Christmas time, yes.
So tonight is the opening reception for what used to be the Block Street Art Show,
mm-hmm.
and it's now the Holiday Art Show with wonderful things, photography and watercolors and acrylics and jewelry and silk scarves, and oh, it just makes my little toes curl. It happens from 7 to 9 today, from 10 to 5 tomorrow, and noon to 4 on Sunday. It's at Studio 545 on Center Street.
Yes, so by the trail.
And I'm asked to convey to you that there are parking spaces next to the building, but there is also parking across the street, they hope, at the Quonset Hut. All right, Saturday daytime, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the musical at the Walton Arts Center. 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 4 o'clock, tickets start at $28. Or the holiday open house at the Hawkins House and the Rogers Historical Museum from 12:30 to 4. And that's free. And on Sunday, you can get up and go to the alternative gift market at St. Paul's. Gifts like a gift certificate, a gift to the Heifer Project.
Right, or, yeah, that helps them feed people somewhere else, and you can do it in somebody else's name
right.
and honor. Right. So holiday or non-holiday, you got plenty to do.
And not too expensive. It's just what I'm going to spend at that art show.
There you go. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
91.3 is supported by Butterfield Trail Village, a premier Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being, offering daily activities, a variety of living options, plus wellness facilities, including an aquatic center and spa services. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org. The Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra presents The Clef Club Saturday, December 9th at the Four Points on Walton Boulevard in Bentonville. This one-night-only fundraiser will feature cocktails, a three-course dinner, and Rachel Fields as Susie St. James with the APO Jazz Combo. ArkansasPhilharmonic.org for tickets. It's time for the annual KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway, your chance to win a gift from one of our many generous KUAF underwriters. Participants include the 2018 Fayetteville Roots Festival, Penguin Ed's Barbecue, and SONA, Symphony of Northwest Arkansas. Winners announced Friday, December 15th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. You can register or get more information at our website, KUAF.com.
Trout fishing in America. The musical duo of Keith Grimwood and Ezra Eidlett have been writing together, singing together, recording together, and touring together for 41 years. They continue to bring us great music with their latest release, The Strangest Times. Thursday night, they'll perform songs from that new CD at Sunrise Stage in Fayetteville. The Grammy-nominated duo often records music with young listeners in mind, but can also, as they did with The Strangest Times, write music with adult themes. The songs on the new CD take on subjects like visiting the doctor after we all reach a certain age, and some of the songs are inspired by memories of previous experiences. During a visit to the Furman Garner Performance Studio, Keith Grimwood explained the new CD reflects a different time in the Trout careers than when they began their partnership 4 decades ago.
Ezra and I have been playing music together for 41 years now. When we first started writing, we wrote about a coming-of-age experience. No, we wouldn't have written that album 20 years ago. No way. You write about what you know when you write about what's current, you know, what's going on, what you're thinking about things.
I hear, and most people who hear this will hear it for the first time all at once. So to me, there seems to be this unifying theme of sort of a little bit of reflection, but a little bit of acceptance and sort of, reflection. You write the songs all across time. So you have a different experience, obviously, chronologically than we do as listeners. But would you say that there is a theme of reflection and acceptance in these songs?
I would say that's pretty accurate. And these songs came in a fairly short amount of time. We decided it was time. We had been thinking adult thoughts, playing adult music, and we were just having those sorts of feelings. You know, Keith started writing down these lyrics. They're not children's lyrics. There's nothing the child couldn't hear. But they're not kids' lyrics, and we just got on a roll. I was still living in Prairie Grove at the time and had a recording studio available at our beck and call. So Keith had sent me a set of lyrics. I'd be working on some music, and bam, the song would come out. And we also decided to make this a really minimal sort of recording. Rather than having keyboards and fiddles and everything else you could possibly throw on there, pretty much just what the duo does. A little bit of overdubbing, but very little.
Which takes you back to, we did a 1990 release called Truth is Stranger Than Fishing. And that was pretty much a duo sound. And that's the way we started. Then after that release, people would say, yeah, but to play it on the radio, they want it to be, you know, realized, fleshed out more. So we, you know, did that for a bunch of years and decided, well, let's go back to the other. So now we're back to that.
It's called The Strangest Times.
You know, it's not a political statement, but it is in the air. It is without doubt in the air. These are strange times. And not only just politically, but personally. We're treading uncharted territory as adults. You know, our children are grown and gone. And we are moving on in this world. As long-term friends, as older men, and it is a bit strange.
And people are living longer these days. There's going to be more time for reflection as the age expectancy expands. I'm not going to jinx myself because if I say I'm going to live a long time, I'll probably die on the way out of here, maybe during the interview. But, you know, honestly, we are living longer. Human beings are, and we're going to have to find something to do with that time. This next act, Act Three, or as I've heard it called. So, you know, yeah, you look back, but you have to look forward too. And there's a lot going on. It is strange times. uncharted waters.
Not a lot of people are fortunate enough to have someone professionally that they can count on and talk to and grow with for 41 years.
It seems kind of normal.
It's what, say, you and your partner are used to here.
That's what we do every day, you know? People ask us, how do you play music for kids? It seems kind of normal, you know? But, yeah, I realize it is an abnormal experience. I know it's not really common, but we've just managed to keep it together for a really long time now.
What would you like to play?
Well, let's see. What do you have, a six or a eight string on?
I got my bouzouki.
Ezra's got his bouzouki on over there, and that means he would like to start off with the title cut of the CD. It's called The Strangest Times.
If I see a full moon rising, watch a half moon set, reach into my pocket to get what I can't get. If it all stops making sense, I know I'll be just fine. Honey, you show up at the strangest times. When everything goes never green, fences fall apart. Getting better makes it worse when I cannot start. When the coyotes howl and the wind stops on a dime. Honey, you show up at the strangest times. When the choirs fall silent and the bells won't ring, when all my days get lost and I can't find anything. It was raining in the morning, snowing hard by noon. At 5 o'clock, the world was closed and it won't reopen soon. I was wishing I weren't lonely, but feeling low and left behind. Honey, you show up at the strangest times. When the choirs fall silent and the bells won't ring, when all my days get lost and I can't find anything. That day I wrecked my car, that day I lost my job, that time I wasn't looking, that night when I got robbed. When it all starts to unravel and the clock starts to unwind. Honey, you show up at the strangest times. You show up at the strangest times.
I love that song. It's a song of appreciation.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
It is, too. It is.
Yeah.
Some people, you just find that in your life as you go through. When things start getting weird, you just look around and somebody's there all the time. You know, it's like somebody. Somebody shows up and you see one person showing up more often, you know, when you need them. That's kind of a nice thing. Really nice thing.
I know you said it's normal. It seems normal to the two of you to have the same professional partner for 41 years. Does it seem normal to be better than ever 41 years in? Because you are.
Thank you.
You really are.
We have maintained interest and intensity just in our, throughout our career. Different things happen. Keith has picked up fiddle, and you'll hear his fiddle debut on this record. The bouzouki is something that comes to mind. Banjo is something that I've played more. We've sort of just allowed ourselves the freedom to do what it is that we want to do. So often when a band comes to be a record label unit, they get pigeonholed as something, and that's what they got to be. The best reggae band, the best blues band, the best children's band, the best whatever. And we've sort of been happily whatever we want to be. And that's the luxury of owning your own record label.
I think it's lucky that we've never had a hit. I mean, Gary Puckett, the Union Gap, had a hit, and they had to record the same song like 20 times for the same song it hit. I'm sure that if we'd have had a big hit, we'd have had to sound like that forever, but luckily we didn't.
It sounds like a little bit you're saying you figured out how to get out of your own way.
Oh, boy, I say that so often. I say that's the most important thing, is to know when to get out of your own way and how to do it. But you have to do it. Yeah, when we start writing a song, it's a common thing we talk about, let the song write itself. You start the song. You get the idea. You start it. You throw it out there. We both throw down and work on it, a little bit of this and that. But you have to get out of your own way. You have to let the song write itself.
You got to listen to it. You know, yeah. A lot of fiction writers talk about their characters define themselves, and they're almost just channeling character. And it's the same with songwriting. You got to listen to the song. Does that fit? Does that not fit? It might be a convenient rhyme or a convenient phrase, but it may not fit. And if it doesn't fit, you're lucky. If you have a partner that will look at you in the eye and say, no, that doesn't work.
It seems like you would get better if you did something for a long time, but that's not necessarily the case, is it? Sometimes you get tired of it and everything, mm-hmm. but we just haven't really gotten tired of it yet. And we still find new challenges, new ways to approach the same thing that we've always loved.
Sunrise Stage
is a beautiful place to play. The attention to detail there is lovely. The acoustics are grand. A beautiful, intimate setting, a perfect place to do our album release for The Strangest Times. I'm super excited about playing there.
We didn't talk about this beforehand. Can we hear one more song?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, let's do the one he likes.
All right. I'm for it. Now take a half a second.
Take your second.
You might.
That's a beautiful guitar, too.
Let me tell you about this song.
Thank you.
We drive a lot. We had a Ford pickup truck named Robert Red Ford. He was retired with 540,000 miles. We had Stretch. Stretch had 470,000 miles. That was a van we had. The one that was stolen and came back and then got gone again. We drive a lot, and I love the wheel. I love to drive. I claim it's the illusion of control. And I love the illusion of control. I just love to drive. I like to be driving at night. People wake up, they go to sleep. I just drive. They wake up for their jobs and just drive and just watch the world spin and watch it happen. Now, in order to stay awake, I talk to people who are not there, which can be very comforting to me, but not so comforting to those riding in the van when they wake up and hear me talking to someone who's not there. Ghost that I talk to. You are the ghost that I trust. I tell you things I never tell. I tell you what I must. There are lines that you walk, lines you never cross, seas you never sail, dreams forever lost. Sometimes silence paints a thousand words. Sometimes it's just a wall. I'll be there in the morning. I pump the gas and watch the miles burn. I ache as hungry hours pass. I hum and listen to the tires turn. I know nothing lasts. Rub your eyes as the night lights dim. Life goes on, time gets bent. Don't get lost, don't get tired. Don't get hypnotized. I'll be there in the morning. You are the ghost that I talk to. You are the ghost that I trust. I tell you things I never tell. I tell you what I must.
Ezra Eilert and Keith Grimwood, Trout Fishing in America, in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Their new CD is titled The Strangest Times, and they'll host a release party Thursday night, that's December 7th, at Sunrise Stage in Fayetteville. More information at troutmusic.com or at the Sunrise Stage Facebook page.
Support for 91.3 comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, now featuring arts and entertainment, including largest venues, plus local business news from Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and information at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com. The KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway is underway. It's your chance to win a gift from one of many generous KUAF underwriters. Participants this season include Bombadil's Cafe, Arcega's Coffee Roasters, and Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Winners announced Friday, December 15th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. To register, KUAF.com.
A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Charleston. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for spending part of your Friday with us. I will be back Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large. Weekend Ozarks at Large every Sunday morning at 9 when we play some of our favorite news stories and interviews from the previous week of daily shows and some new things as well. That's Sunday morning at 9. Then Monday at noon and 7 back for another brand new week of all new shows on Ozarks at Large. If you miss something, you can go to KUAF.com or OzarksAtLarge.com to hear past editions of the program as well as individual stories and interviews. And you can take us with you if you'd like. We're available as an absolutely free podcast. You can subscribe through places like Stitcher or iTunes, also available on the KUAF app. That, too, is free for many smartphones and tablets. Have a safe and pleasurable weekend. Back Sunday morning at 9 with Weekend Ozarks at Large.